I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Season 2 of the 147 Podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning Players and Tour Champion and former Champion of the World, the magician, Sean Murphy.
And I tell you what, Sean, unless you pull your finger out and start getting some ranking points, we're going to have to change that introduction, aren't we?
I know, you'll be changing it very, very soon. Hello, everybody. Whilst I take that knife out of my back, this is the 147 Podcast. But you make a good point. Very, very early on in the show. If I don't string some wins together soon, I won't be at the Players' Championship to defend it.
It'll happen. You know it'll happen,
will it?
Sean.
Will
come
it?
On. Yeah, well, I've got every confidence in you. Goodness. Every confidence in you. How are you doing, Sean?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good, actually. Yeah, no, my game's in good shape and, you know, everything's rosy. So, yeah, no, the whole thing's good. I do, like, genuinely, though, I do need to get some points together.
Yeah, you do. You will. You've got the German Masters. You've got the Welsh Open. You'll get your points.
I am a bit bothered about it.
No,
I won the first ever Players' Championship.
Did you?
Wasn't there to defend it the next year. So I don't really want to do that again. I don't want the enigmony of not turning up and being there to defend the title. But as I say, I've got Germany and the Welsh Open left to get in the Players. I'll have to, and of course the tour is looming large in the rear view mirror. I need to do that as well. Anyway, what a lovely positive note to start the show. Thanks very much. Follow Sean and Phil for more uplifting content.
Should we set the scene?
Goodness.
We're actually together again doing a podcast. That's two on the bounce. What's going on?
I tell you what, there won't be a third time if you carry on at this rate, sir.
We are in Mansfield ahead of an exhibition this evening for ABC Snooker Exhibitions for our friend Tony, which is happening tonight. But let's face it, you're not going to listen to this and get tickets because it will already have happened probably. So
you've already missed out. Sorry about that.
We are in Mansfield. We are together here recording the podcast, which is great stuff. We will look back to the World Grand Prix, which took place last week. We will look forward to the German Masters, which is happening next week. But we've got to just first of all say thank you to everyone again that's voted for us in Sports Podcast Awards. Voting closes in 2 days' time. The results are announced next week. Please vote for us.
Yeah, we've got our caps turned upside down. We are asking, we are begging. We're not too proud to beg. We are asking. We are so, so thankful to even be in this category and the nomination process at all. But nobody's come this far to come second.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we'll take whatever we can get. But Sports Podcast Awards, there's links to it on all our social media at 147pod or on mine at Announcer Phil or Sean's various different social media logins that he's got. Just click on it and vote for us if you can. A couple of days left. The announcer winners next week. So we've got everything crossed.
Unless you're a heart surgeon listening to this podcast in your earphones whilst performing major heart surgery, in which case, crack on. Unless you're a heart surgeon, stop what you're doing, push pause, and go and vote for us. If you voted for us already, thank you. But please vote for us again.
They'll probably be on strike anyway. So they'll only be in a picket line. Move on. So it's fine. It's all good.
Move on.
So
right.
I have to make a very brief apology.
Ooh, I love these.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Get your own back. Stick the knife in. Okay.
Are you apologising for? This could be anything.
On the last podcast, you asked, I referred to ITV4 as being free to air. You questioned whether it really was free to air. And I said, no, you can listen to it without a license as long as you don't watch the BBC channel. It wasn't true. What you can do is watch on streaming services, okay? But I think it's on delay. So you could still, technically, you could still watch it and it is free. But a lot of people have messaged in, Phil said this and it's not true. Okay, so fair enough. So no, you could watch it on delay. You can go on ITVX or whatever it's called now and you can watch last week's World Grand Prix. So there we go. Sorry.
Do you know what? Right. I've had to make the odd climb down.
Really?
Over my career. I've had to eat humble pie. And do you know what? I've eaten quite a lot of it over the years. Well played.
Thank you, sir.
It takes a big man to admit when they're wrong.
You call me a big man now, are you? You criticised people for that in the past. Anyway, moving on. Right, so last week's World Grand Prix in Leicester. What a week it was as well. What a week of snooker. I mean, you great first round result against John Higgins. Whitewashed John Higgins.
Yeah, it was a shame it was a 5-round tournament.
Let's leave
shame it wasn't a 1-round tournament.
Let's leave it there, shall we?
Goodness me.
But it was a masterclass in the end from the Rocket, Ronnie O'Sullivan. Beat Judd Trump in the final. The final wasn't a classic. I think the highest break in the final was like 72 or 74 or something. However, Saturday night against Ding Junhui, I've said it on social media, it was one of the best performances I've ever seen at a snooker table. I think the only one I've seen that probably runs it close was Ronnie in, I think it was Preston, when he beat either Zhao Gudong or Yanbing Tao, I can't remember who it was that he beat. It was a best of five and he won in just under an hour. And that included a 15-minute mid-session interval, which was ridiculous. And that night, he came through the curtain, he put his arm around his opponent. I was stood there, so I know. He put his arm around his opponent, he said, mate, I'm sorry, I just couldn't miss.
Cheers.
What a problem to have.
Thanks for that.
But no, Saturday night against Ding was special. I mean, it was really special.
I was just trying to think there what I was doing because it passed me by because I was practicing at the Landywood Snooker Club with Stan Moody.
Oh, there you go.
And it was, I just want to go on a slight diversion for a minute. It was wonderful to be there. It was obviously by complete fluke that I was there because I'd hoped to be in Leicester. And I had a few days spare. So I went there practicing. It was great to catch up with Stan and his family and, you know, pick up my role with them, which has been widely talked about. But whilst I was there, the EPSB tour were there with this, with one of their final junior event of the season. And it was a great 48 hours to see all the families there, all the young, you know, boys and girls there playing various age groups with all their parents. It really took me back down memory lane.
Yeah, I can imagine it did.
You know, you could see some of the lads having some hard conversations with their dads. And of course, we all remember having those ourselves. It was wonderful to just be amongst the atmosphere again. And these kids are chasing their dream. You know, people anecdotally say that snooker's, you know, not great in terms of participation and where is the next generation and they're coming. Don't worry about that.
Oh, yeah.
They are coming. Some of the games I saw and witnessed over the weekend were fabulous. And Oliver Sykes, I think he's won 5 out of 6 events this week, this year. He won that event again and sailed off into the distance. But Stan and I were actually playing.
Right.
And we started having a best of 9. We started... I think we started before Ronnie and Ding had started. We'd been playing all day. We started a new set before Ronnie and Ding started on the TV. And I think before we got to our 4th frame, where we would have a little 10-minute tea break, they'd finished.
Wow.
That was how quick it was. I think I went into the bar or something and said, oh, is the match not on? They went, oh, yeah, the match has been on. It's been done.
Yeah.
Like Stan, we need to quicken up.
it was incredible. I mean, obviously I was there watching it and announcing them out and everything else. And it's really funny. You would think if people had paid to go to the evening session, they'd feel a little bit shortchanged if all they got was sort of 1 hour, 15 minutes or whatever it was. But no one did. No one did. Everyone I spoke to on the Sunday that had been there on the Saturday night was just waxing lyrical about how amazing the snooker was. It was the term snooker from the gods is used far too often. That was. It was very special.
I think the question everyone wants to know the answer to, though, bearing in mind it was such an early night. Did you end up in Pop World?
No.
Right.
As you well know, I'm doing dry January.
You don't have to drink.
What, if you go into Pop World?
The way you dance.
You do need to drink before you dance like that. It was great, though, you know. Saturday night, there wasn't just one goat in the house. There was two. And I'm not counting me, obviously. AP McCoy, the finest jockey in the history of horse racing, turned up to watch the snooker on Saturday night with a ticket. Not on an ITV backstage job. Turned up with his friend Neil Mulholland, who's a friend of mine as well, with a ticket to watch, and he just turned up to watch the snooker. Yeah, talk about the best, sort of liking the best. He turned up to watch Ronnie against Ding. And then we had Ivan Tony come as well, the Brentford striker who made his comeback after his gambling ban. He turned up on Sunday to watch the snooker again. He's a massive snooker fan.
Ivan Tony,
the Brentford striker, yeah.
Well, this is a topic I don't know if we've covered before, but I have people have weird tics and they have weird things.
Mm.
I have a real issue with people who have two Christian names.
Oh, you mean like hairdressers?
As their name.
That all have two Christian names.
So, you know, Ivan Tony, I would struggle to get past that.
Tony Ivan.
What's his name? I don't know the guy. I don't know who you mean.
You've never heard of Ivan Tony? Are you serious?
No, never heard of Ivan Tony.
Oh, wow.
No.
Well, you will do soon because he's shortly to be leaving Brentford to go to a very, very, very big club.
What, Liverpool?
Possibly. He's linked to a few, but he will be going to one
surely,
of them.
Surely, and we are going off topic now, but today, Jurgen Klopp announced that he's resigning at the end of the season as the Liverpool manager. Is that real?
I've not seen that.
Is that? I assumed that was a thing to step aside because Sven-Göran Eriksson, who's been diagnosed with terminal cancer. He'd always expressed a desire to manage Liverpool.
Well,
and I just assumed that was a thing so he could step aside and Sven could manage the club until maybe he's too ill to carry on.
I don't know. This has passed me by. I've not seen it. I've seen about Sven-Göran Eriksson. It's very
Jurgen Klopp standing down has passed you by?
Yeah, completely. Yeah,
and you
I've not seen
claim to work in the sports industry?
Some of us do Goodness a bit of planning me. Before these podcasts.
Yes,
Sean,
well, as the listeners don't know, that you were in your car listening to rubbish music on your way. That's what I do know.
While you, Dickiness. In your Rolls Royce, were blocked in a car park by a coach.
Oh, well, it wasn't just any coach. And this is how the podcast goes full circle. I left my hotel in Sheffield this morning, having had a semi-heated conversation. Well, some would call it a debate. Others would call it a row. With the driver of the Brighton and Hove Albion team coach.
Wow.
Sorry, mate, we can't move. No, sorry, mate, you've misunderstood. You are moving your coach. Please move your coach.
Did he not notice that your car was bigger than his coach? Yeah, some podcasts are scripted.
People don't see this, do they?
They don't.
Now, the podcast will start any minute. Just hold with us.
So the World Grand Prix was brilliant. Listening figures, by the way. ITV.
Listening figures.
Viewing figures.
Let's start again.
Viewing figures. 1.3 million were watching the final on Sunday. 1.3 million. And before people come at me and say, oh, it's because Ronnie was there. No, the Scottish Open viewing figures were up massively year on year. And Ronnie wasn't even at that event. So if you look at viewing figures for the season, you look at ticket sales, they're all massively on the up, which is great news.
I do just want to make one point, though, which last time out I made a point about the why do we refer to it as free to air, which
you got yourself into trouble.
I didn't get you, you got yourself into trouble. You see these viewing figures?
Mm.
I think they are complete and utter rubbish.
Why?
Because how are they judged? How do people know?
I don't know.
Is it done on a device? Is it done on? You know, so you don't know, do you? What happens if you're watching on the iPlayer or ITVX, and there's 20 people watching one device which you've cast to a screen?
Well, yeah, that's a point. I'm sure it's all taken into account.
I don't know. They released the figures the day after. Like, how do they know?
I don't know. You would think nowadays, the fact that everything's digital, there would actually be a way of knowing. I know years ago, it was diaries. People had to keep a diary of what they watched.
What?
And then, yeah, this is how it worked. And this, I think this is still how Rajar do it, who do the radio numbers. They had to keep a diary of what they'd watched or what they'd listened to and then submit it at the end of a month. And all of that is then inputted and blah, blah, blah. That was how it was done. I'm not sure how it's done now, actually. But that's how it was done.
It's bothered me for a long time.
Has it really?
Yeah, a long time.
Wow.
And do you know, having got it off my chest, I feel no better about it.
Those figures, though, I mean, they end careers or boost careers. Yeah, you know, they're massive. I did the World of Sport Wrestling for ITV, and the numbers for that, they weren't great. And that was why there was never a second series, because of the figures. And it's one of those you think, God, if those figures had been more, there'd have been a second series. We could all have had nice careers and tours and everything else. So they do actually mean a lot. But all we can do is take them at face value. And they were great. Really good numbers. I think they're actually the best numbers ITV4 have ever had for snooker, which is superb. I mean, it's great to see. It's good for the sport. The fact numbers are up year on year all over is great to see and is good for the sport. You know, there's some people out there that knock our sport, not your sport. And
I know you're involved enough. You can call it our sport.
The sport is
you've been co-opted on.
It's in a good place.
The sport is in a great place. I have to listen to this drivel all the time, Phil, as you can imagine.
Talking about me in particular,
though. No. You're on a daily block. but I have to listen and engage with this drivel all the time, everywhere. I go, oh, you know, I used to watch snooker and it's glory. Don't see as much snooker these days. It's not on as much. Absolute crap.
Yep.
There's more snooker on the TV today than ever.
100%.
And in every measurable way, it's bigger than it ever was in the perceived glory days of the 80s and the early 90s when everyone thinks snooker was it was booming.
Yep.
It's bigger now than it ever was.
Yeah.
Ticket sales, attendances, viewing figures, participation, prize money, events, you know, ticket. Give me another metric. It's doing the healthiest and the best it's ever been. So next time you see us, we love you to say hello, but please don't lead with the, oh, it's not doing what it used to do.
There's no characters anymore, though, Sean. No characters anymore.
What a load of rubbish. What they mean is there's no players like Alex peeing in a flower pot. That's what they mean.
Yeah,
well, isn't the game better for it? Goodness me! Some of these snooker players today, with their aim, they'd miss.
Well, leave that to me and Rob Walker. We've got that side covered.
Jeez, we've strayed into a very weird area, haven't we?
We have, but that was the World Grand Prix. The World Grand Prix was brilliant last week. Absolutely fantastic. Big success in every conceivable way, it's got to be said. Really good tournament. So yeah, well done to all involved, and well done to Ronnie. Well done to Judd, who's playing very well, by the way. 3 ranking titles this season. Ronnie said afterwards on the floor when he was interviewed by Rob that Judd is the man to beat going to the Crucible. I put it to Ronnie afterwards that I think he's taking the attention away from himself a little bit there somehow. But I think if you look at markers or pointers towards Sheffield, Judd is one of the people to beat there, isn't he?
Oh, without question. I mean, he's been one of the people to beat there for the last 10 years. I mean, there's no getting away from that. He had that famous year a few years ago, didn't he, at the press conference day on the day before where he announced he was the player to beat and then got dumped out in round one. You know, we've all done it, Judd. We've all said it.
It's called Murphy's Law for a reason, that
isn't
one,
it?
Sure,
thank
isn't
you
it?
Very much. I didn't invent it, but, you know, I could have done. No, but in all seriousness, he absolutely is one of the players to beat. I think Ronnie's up to his old tactics, isn't he, of deflection and,
of course
you know, pressure release. He's been doing it for 30 years. He's an absolute master at it. He's got 8, 8, and 7. He's pretty good at it, guys. Don't you worry about that. He'll be going there searching for the 888. That'll be one to look out for, of course. But I imagine the likely contenders will be there again and they'll be getting themselves ready. The person we must talk about briefly is Neil Robertson.
Yeah. I was going to come on to this now. I joked.
What is going on?
Yeah, I joked at the start about you needing points to get in the players in the tour, which you do and you'll get them. That happened to Neil last season. He was the defending champion of, was it both the players in the tour? Certainly one or the other.
All right.
And he didn't qualify. But that's continued. And looking at Neil now, I think his prize money for the season is something like £15,000, something like that. He's way down the rankings on the one-year list. He's got an awful lot of money to come off on the two-year list before the end of the season. You know, there's talk he may have to qualify for the Crucible because he's going to be dropping out. But more worryingly, unless he turns it round, well, I'll pose the question. Is there...
Don't say it.
No, I've got to ask the question.
Don't say it.
Could Neil Robertson drop off tour?
Well,
It seems unfathomable, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean...
He's too good.
Yeah, he's too good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he will have to turn it round at some stage. I mean, if he keeps going in complete free fall, he will find himself at Q School. That's how maths works. Is it only mathematics? But it's just... I can't really carry the conversation on because it's just too ridiculous. Yeah. This is absolutely ridiculous.
I can't quite believe it's got to this point where we're actually talking about that. And think about, can you imagine turning up to Q School, right? You turn
You'd be devastated.
No, yeah, but just another random player turns up to Q School. They pay their money, they enter. And the first round of Q School, they look up and their opponent is the most successful overseas player in the history of the sport. Wow.
Of course... Having never been there before, I'm not sure where Q School will be this year, but probably never played there before. Neil's not guaranteed to make it. If he had to go to Q School, he might not find it.
That's very true. Look, joking aside...
No, in all seriousness.
Yeah, joking aside, I mean, he's got to turn it. He's too good not to turn it around, Sean, isn't he?
Yeah, no, 100%. Absolutely. My problem is, I have quite a good understanding of the technique of snooker and I've studied it and... I've written some courses on it and I'm involved with the WPBSA coaching program. You know, I'm quite into that. I look at Neil Robertson. He looks as good as he's ever looked.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be anything glaringly wrong with his game. He still looks as majestic around and at the table as he's ever looked. He still looks to be striking the ball well. I know he's teamed up and working very closely with his good friend Joe Perry.
Yep.
Great person to have in your corner.
Got to be a positive, that.
All the indicators point to someone who's good at what they're doing, going to turn things around, going to continue on having a great career. However, it has to happen soon.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he is in trouble.
Yeah.
There's no getting away from that.
I think it will. I actually think it'll start to turn for the end of the season. At the last match that I saw him play was the other week. And was it in the Masters? First round of the Masters, wasn't it? And he got back-to-back centuries in that match, I'm pretty sure, when I was watching it. And he looked great. He lost the match. And that seems to be the story of it, that it needs to click, doesn't it? It needs to click. He needs to put that run together. He could go to Germany next week and win the whole thing.
You wouldn't be surprised.
No. Wouldn't be surprised in the least if he did that.
I know I give him a bit of stick, and it's all in good fun. I hope people understand that. It's all tongue-in-cheek. Neil and I get on great, and we have a bit of banter and all the rest of it. He's too good. He's too good an ambassador for the sport.
He's classy. He's a classy guy.
He's worth too much to the tour. You know, as an ambassador, as a global player, the most successful overseas player. He needs to turn things around. And you know what? I'm sure he will.
I'm sure he will. And fingers crossed he does. Love Neil to bits. Great guy. Really great guy. Very quirky. Very different. But a lovely guy. Underneath all everything else. Just a genuinely lovely guy and a pleasure to watch around the table as well.
Right, Phil, why don't you just marry him?
Because he's already married to his wife, that's why, and I don't marry men. Anyway, there you go. So, yeah, Neil Robertson, fingers crossed he can turn it around sooner rather than later. Right, we need to discuss the massive snooker news of the last week or so. That is the announcement of the Saudi Arabia is it an exhibition? It is an exhibition. Oh, invitational, isn't it?
It's an invitational.
WST invitational event. The Masters over there, their Masters over there, the World Snooker Masters. The top eight players in the world plus two invited players. Playing over there, all part of Riyadh season, which all these different sporting events seem to be part of. Initial thoughts?
I was actually relieved that the tournament we'd been promised, or a version of the tournament we'd been promised a long time ago. You know, pre-COVID, we were promised a full field ranking event out there, but presence out there nonetheless. My overriding feeling was relief that a version of that has landed.
Yep.
Quickly followed by, where's the full field ranking tournament that we were promised? Where is it?
Now, I'll address that.
Where's the tournament for everybody?
I'm going to address that with no actual inside knowledge of anything. I'm going to address this because there was a lot of slightly lower ranked pro players who were straight on social media saying, oh, this is great for the top eight, but what about the rest of us who can't feed our families, blah, blah, blah. I get that, okay? I think it'll come. If you look at all the different markets that have opened up over the years, Germany being a great example, they tend to use one of these as a tester. It tests the water, tests the organisation and everything else.
It's very normal.
Yeah.
It's very normal it's to have an invitation.
Yeah, it's a precursor to a full field event. Now,
very common.
What I would say, there's a lot of players seem to really jump at this, and I get it. I do get it. But this is what happens. They have one of these invitational as a precursor. Then they have the full field ranking event. Now, given the amounts of money that are being spent over in the Middle East, over in Saudi, on sporting events, it would make you think that as and when that does happen, there will be a lot of money to be won there. So what I would say is maybe don't jump because, you know, there could be very good things around the corner. Like I said, saying this with no inside knowledge at all, because I don't have any, okay? But great things could be just around the corner. So maybe not great to jump straight in both feet and then maybe look a bit silly afterwards. This is the way it went. I know you and Brandon and some of the other guys did all sorts over in Germany before they actually got a ranking event there, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, if you go back as far as you want, taking a select field of players to promote the game in that area, in that culture, in that territory, getting it off the ground, followed by a full field event for everyone a year or two later, that's very normal. And that's been a key marketing strategy for World Snooker since day one. You know, it was out in China, it was Hong Kong, India, it was pretty much everywhere we've been. That's been the model. You're absolutely right to make that point. You know, just with my player's hat on, I think one of the things that motivates some of the players to be not negative about it, I think just a little bit crestfallen about it, is that, you know, and a lot of people won't know this, but for instance, we have, you know, we've opened our markets back up to the Chinese events. And I think most of the public won't be aware, but, you know, for instance, as we record this, we are nearly at 11 weeks post the international championships and nobody's been paid.
Yeah, that shocks me, that. Well, why? I mean, what's gone on?
I don't know the ins and outs of it. This is a WST matter with their promoters out in China. But for the overseas events, the players aren't paid by WST. They're paid directly by promoters. And, you know, we are told that getting money of quite large amounts in a lot of cases out of China is quite a complicated matter. There's obviously, you know, tax to be paid and where you've earned it and foreign entertainers tax and all of these types of things, which are very normal when you earn money internationally. But the process is ridiculous. How long it takes is a joke. And so a lot of these players who, you know, there are players who weren't quite well out in the last time we were in China, in Tianjin. And in terms of cash flow, we're all self-employed.
Yep.
You know, you're self-employed. I'm self-employed. From a cash flow point of view, having money that you know you've won but you haven't seen is a difficult world to live in. Meanwhile, a tournament's announced for the top eight who are, in most cases, fairly financially stable. It would just be seen as a bit of a bitter pill to swallow. Now, that prize money from China, 11 weeks deep, is coming.
Yeah, yeah.
WST are contracted to pay it to the players should it not be paid in a certain period of time. But having to wait that long for payment is a contributing factor to this mess.
Because you've got your travel costs as well that you've already paid, is that right?
Yeah, you've got to pay them, and you've got to pay them for the next batch of the tournament. So, you know, flights to Germany next week aren't cheap. It's not easy. Funnily enough, it's not easy to get to from the UK, Berlin, for some reason. Everyone who's just qualified this week for the World Open has to fork out thousands of pounds to get out there for the World Open in Yushan. That's not an easy venue to access. That's at least two flights to China and an internal flight because you can no longer take your queue. This has only just happened as well, and again, people aren't aware of this, but it's an extra cost. You can no longer take your queue, in its case, on the bullet train from Shanghai to Yushan.
Right, now I heard this. Why? What's the rationale there?
There's some new law coming about luggage length and sizes of thingies. You know, you can't do it. So that means we've got to fly to Beijing and take an internal flight to Shangrou, which is next to Yushan. And it you know, so it's a constant moving target. Mm. And you're asking players to fork out, and they're waiting up to 3 months for payment on an event that was months ago. It's a little bit of a mess.
Yeah.
And so I can understand when this new, very big, very exciting event is announced for just a special few, it irks.
Yeah.
I do get it.
There's another reason why it's irking certain people. And I've seen a backlash on social media, and that is due to the human rights situations over there in the Middle East and in Saudi. I get that. Get that completely, okay? Talking here, by the way, as someone that I doubt very much whether I'll be going or involved. In fact, I think there's no chance whatsoever. But, and this is a big but, because this is quite a difficult one to address, actually. A couple of things on this. Firstly, every sport is going out there. Every sport is benefiting from the money and the wealth that there is over there that they are willing to invest into sport. Okay, it seems harsh that snooker, which isn't a cash-rich sport, let's be honest, it's not swimming in money as many sports are. It seems wrong that snooker, for any reason, would say no to that when there's players out there that need money, okay, that need to earn, that need opportunity. So I know it's not great. I know it's not wonderful to say, well, everyone else is doing it, therefore it makes it all right. No, it probably doesn't, but you know, there's people, this is livelihoods that we're talking about here, and people are earning money to feed their kids and to provide for their families. So it comes down to that. And if every other sport's doing it, then why not? The one thing I would say on this is, and this really does annoy me, is the level of hypocrisy that there is knocking about, particularly with journalists, okay? There's a lot of journalists out there who have straight away jumped on this and said, oh, snooker shouldn't be going to the Middle East, blah, 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 blah. Same journalists were in Qatar for the World Cup. The same journalists reported on the World Cup in Qatar. The same journalists report on Grand Prix in the Middle East. The same journalists report on Cristiano Ronaldo playing out in Saudi. The same journalists make a living out of sport in the Middle East. Those same journalists are making out that snooker players shouldn't be able to earn a living partially from the Middle East. Take exception to that. And I think the old, you know, he who is without sin should cast the first stone and all that. I just think it's wrong. Okay. I think it's very much double standards. Pick a side, you know, either yes, be against it and don't benefit from it because they are benefiting from it. They get paid a wage because of this, or accept it, move on. And don't criticise those that are trying to provide for their families. I'll get off my soapbox now, Sean.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we're the snooker podcast that's not a podcast, you know, snooker podcast, but we've gone serious, haven't we? This is a serious topic to cover.
I feel really passionately about this because it's people's livelihoods that certain people are messing with. And it's very easy to be critical and everything else, but then to also take the money when you're in that situation. And you know, I think certain people are going to be going out there to work and they're going to be made to feel bad for going out there to work when the people that are actually making them feel bad are also going out there to work and earning money from it, which for me, it's just massive hypocrisy. Those people who do have a problem with it, who are vocal about it, no problem at all with that. That's absolutely fine. Everyone's got an opinion. everyone's welcome to an opinion on something like that. I think a lot of their opinions actually are absolutely spot on. I've got mine, you've got yours. But hypocrisy does annoy me. So that's my side. Should we go to the Golden Ball?
Well, I wouldn't mind having my two penneth on
go
it.
Go on,
just
Sean,
we move
you go
on
for it.
I'm uncomfortable with the assumptions that are made that because you support these events and want to enter and play in these territories, that somehow equals supporting these regimes. I don't believe the two do go together. I really don't believe that you can make that link, without going super political at all. I think when you watch the news and you feel sympathy for what's going on in the Middle East at the moment in Palestine, that doesn't make you anti-Semitic.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can be, but you can do both. You can have sympathy without judging or belittling a different nation. The two aren't linked. Wanting to go and play snooker in Saudi Arabia, in a tournament which is, you know, a very big tournament, very glamorous event. Wanted to see the world and travel and do all of those things, doesn't mean you support a regime with a poor human rights record. It doesn't mean that at all. And I wish people would stop making those links.
Absolutely.
We are sports people. We've spent our life learning how to play this particular sport, and we're trying our best.
And if we look back through history, let's face it, our human rights record, not exactly anything to shout about all that loudly. So, you know, I think we have to be a little bit careful what we're saying there. Right, Golden Ball. Come on, we've got to touch on this because this is very, very different. The Riyadh season, Golden Ball will be on the table. It will be worth 20 points. Now, we don't know the whole thing, but it will be worth an extra 20 points, but can only be potted at the end of a 147 maximum break, taking that to 167. Now, Dave Hendon on the Snooker Scene podcast made a very good point. There will be no 167 breaks. Because to be able to do that, you'd have to change the rules of snooker to accommodate that. So it's just a novelty, as Dave says, and I take his point. Absolutely, I think he's spot on. By the way, his podcast this week, very, very good. Very good podcast this week. As it always is. Now, I asked Ronnie about this in his post-match after the final on Sunday. Have you heard this at all?
No.
Oh, this is brilliant. So I brought it up. I mentioned it. I said, the Golden Ball, which will be on the table, you pot it at the end of a 147 to get a 167 break. As quick as a flash, Ronnie looked me dead in the eye and he said, do you know what the prize money is for that? First thing that entered his head. This is the man, by the way, who was on the first black once, asked the referee.
Phenomenal.
What's the prize money for a 147?
That was incredible.
As quick as you like, just went, what's the prize money for that, Phil? And I thought, wow, there is a man who is very much attuned to cash. What do you think?
It's completely bonkers, isn't it? It's bonkers. It's different. It's not in the rules. It's all of these things. The snooker traditionalists are turning, aren't they? They're all out on the streets with torches. There are marches being planned across the... Oh, no.
No.
It's just a game of snooker. Listen, I said the other day, actually, that in another outlet that this is obviously something that WST have had to give probably to get the event over the line. I'm sure the promoters out there in Saudi wanted the event to be different. They want it to be obviously, you know, glamorous and different to all the others. And this is something, this isn't going to filter through to the Crucible. Don't worry. It's just something different. I have a feeling somebody will do it. You know, I have a feeling that somebody will make a 147 plus 20.
Yeah.
I think it will happen.
I think it'll happen. Do you know, there's various different schools of thought at the moment. Will the ball be on the table all the way through? Will it be placed on the table at the end of a 147 should it happen? If it's on there all the way through, it actually changes the game because there's another ball that you can snooker people behind.
Where will it be?
Well, this is it. Who knows, right?
The obvious place for it to go would be between pink and blue.
What I think should
Of course, then
happen.
It's in the way for the break-off.
What I think should happen.
Where's it going to go?
Right, here's my thought, okay? I think during the match, on a plinth behind the table, there should be a cushion with a golden ball sat on top, okay? Sat on a stool behind said golden ball should be Cristiano Ronaldo, okay? He lives in Saudi Arabia. He's playing football over there, okay? He should sit there as the guardian of the golden ball. Now, the second someone gets a 147, Ronaldo springs into life. He brings the cushion with the golden ball to the table. He places the golden ball on the table. He climbs on the table and he kicks the golden ball. And it'll go off however many cushions, and wherever it comes to rest, that's where the player has to pot the golden ball from.
What's that word you use? What's that word you use a lot? Puddled.
Puddled.
I actually think you've lost it.
Sorry. Is that any more puddled than there being a golden ball that's worth 20 points at the end of a 147?
I think you've lost it.
If you're going to do something, do it properly, right?
Have you ever tried kicking a snooker ball?
No.
No, it really hurts.
I can imagine it does, actually. It really hurts. Yeah. Especially one made of gold.
Especially one...
It's going to be heavy.
Yeah. No, it's not fun. It's no fun. No. No.
So, no idea. It's complete madness. But, you know, he's going to add something to it. It's going to be a little bit different. So, there you go. We've got qualifiers this week, World Open and Welsh Open qualifiers. Next week is the German Masters. I was hoping to get there, and it's not... The stars haven't aligned so I can get out there. You will be there, Sean.
I will be there. Well, I mean, I'm going, and I'll be there for at least a day. Who knows what type of form will come out the end of my queue? You know, who knows?
They love you in Germany, Sean. Come on, you've got to perform out there for those.
I do have a good relationship with the German snooker fans. But spent many years going around the country, you know, doing exhibitions and stuff with Brandon and Dragon Stars years ago. Been to many great venues, played many times in the Tempodrome. It is one of everyone's favourite tour
Sorry,
stops.
Sorry, in the where? The where?
Yeah, no, I call it
Tempodrome. No, it's Tempodrome. I've heard Phil Studd, it's Tempodrome.
Phil Studd says Tempodrome,
doesn't he? Tempodrome, yeah. Tempodrome.
Yeah. If he says that again, I'm throwing something at my TV.
Tempodrome. Well, you will be there. A couple of players that won't be there. Hussein
Hopefully
Vafai.
Phil won't be there.
I won't be there. Phil Studd will be there, I'm sure. Hussein Vafai, sadly, visa issues. Stop him going to Elliot.
Visa issues.
Elliot Slesser gets a bye from his second round match, which should have been against Hussein. Elliot Slesser straightens the last 32. Happy Christmas,
Sless. So here are some slight idiosyncrasies with the tour. We'll come back. We'll come back to this. We'll go full circle here in a minute. Hussein Vafai can't go because of visa issues.
Yep.
Wow.
Correct. But he's won a first round match, so he can't be replaced by another player because he's already won a first round match. So he can't be replaced. So Sless has to get the bye. However...
So something needs putting in place there, doesn't it, to ensure that all competitors in a situation like that have the means to continue their progression through an event, should they win.
Because
if he's played in that event knowing he can't go to Berlin, how can that be right?
Well, no, because surely he will have... Don't you have to apply for the visa afterwards when you know you're going?
Well, I mean, that's one way. You don't have to wait till... You don't have to wait.
Yeah, but it costs money, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, so surely he's not going to spend money on a visa that he might not get to use if he loses his first round match in qualifying.
No, but you can't then in good faith enter a tournament you know you can't make.
Yeah, but he probably didn't know at the time that he couldn't make it.
Meanwhile, in the World Open qualifying, this week just gone, Barry Hawkins' opponent for his match, whose name escapes me briefly.
Okay.
Withdrew on the afternoon of. Barry Hawkins found out 20 minutes before his match that not only was his opponent not coming, but his opponent had been replaced by Stephen Hallworth.
Oh,
now,
wow.
You know, fair play for the replacement and good luck to Stephen and all the rest of it. Massive cock up by WST not telling player A, Barry Hawkins, that one, his opponent had withdrawn, and two, not telling him till 20-7.
That he had a different opponent.
That not only was the player he prepared to play not there, he was actually playing Stephen. In fact, there's a rumour going around that he saw Stephen, knew he wasn't in the draw, and said, "Who say Stephen? Who are you playing?" And he went, "You."
Is that true?
There's a rumour that actually happened. I didn't see it, but that is, "Who are you playing?"
Wow.
"I'm here to play you." Mirror that with, then, the situation in Germany. Elliot's won through. Your man's won through. Can't go because of his thingy.
Yeah.
Elliot gets a bye to the semifinals.
Yeah.
How can that work?
No, there's a reason for that, though. That's because he's won a first-round match. If you've won a match, you can't be replaced, can you? So that was a first-round match. But Elliot's won his first-round match. Hussein won his first-round match. So you can't replace someone into the second round. That wouldn't be fair on everyone else that lost in the first round. because you're putting someone straight into second round draw. You can't do that. So that's right. And happy Christmas, Les. You're into the last 32 in Berlin. What another player?
First time he's been in the last 32 for 5 years. Fair play, Elliot. Don't get a nosebleed.
God, we're going to get messages from Sless now and not the normal ones I get from him. Which are disgraceful, by the way, Elliot Slesser, if you're listening. Another player that won't be there is the form player at the moment, the Rocket Ronnie O'Sullivan, who has withdrawn on medical grounds. He will be replaced in the first round, I believe, by Barry Pinches. So, yeah, that's a bit of a change. I'm just having a quick look now. So, yeah, Barry Pinches replaces Ronnie O'Sullivan. He plays Julian Leclerc in the first round. These are the held-over games. Ali Carter against Michael White. Mark Selby against Marco Fu. Your very good self, Sean Murphy, against Jusser. Correct pronunciation, Jusser, by the way. Mark Allen.
You'd know, wouldn't you? Speaking fluent Mandarin as you do.
Well, you know, you can read out Mark Allen's opponent then. Who's Mark Allen playing?
Mark Allen is playing, Manasawin Petmalakul.
Manasawin Petmalakul. Sorry, I'm just looking smug at Sean right now. Manasawin Petmalakul plays Mark Allen.
You're assuming you're correct.
Judd Trump plays, I am correct. I've checked with him. Judd Trump plays Lucas Kleckers. Luca Brissell says Ishpreet Singh Chadha. And Neil Robertson plays Sanderson Lam. That is the first round.
Now, this isn't on our agenda to talk about. Oh, but before the break, I want us to talk about this very, very briefly.
Did you see
the footage that emerged from the Ishpreet Singh versus Stuart Bingham qualifying match?
Yes, I did.
Of the foul.
Yes.
That was a foul, which he wasn't called a foul. What did you make of all that?
Right. Was it a foul that wasn't called a foul, or was it not a foul that was called a foul?
It was a foul.
Okay.
There's no question it was a foul. It was a foul.
Well, I've not seen it that close up, so I don't know.
The ref didn't see it.
Just talk us through exactly what happened.
Ishpreet Singh's down at queuing. He's playing the black to what we call the number one pocket. He's feathering up at the cue ball. And when you watch the footage, he clearly feathers the cue ball.
Okay.
You can see he touches the ball.
Yep.
There's no call from the ref. Stuart Bingham in his chair, absolutely by rights, stops play. You fouled.
Yep.
Because it looked like Ishpreet was about to carry on.
Right. He wasn't calling it himself then.
I've seen lots of debates now about, you know, does the non-striker have the right to stop play?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
What was the ref look? How did the ref not see it? What was she watching? What do you think?
Listen,
no, we don't have VAR.
Yeah, referees are human beings. Everyone misses things. You know, I wouldn't do the referee's job for all the tea in China.
You'd be too loud for it.
Yeah,
you'd be like 137.
Yeah, I would. I'd get all excited.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I would. I'd get too excited. I wouldn't do the referee's job for all tea in China. I think if the referees miss something, they miss something. But I don't think the onus is on the referee in that situation. The onus is on the player. And if the player's feathered the cue ball, the player knows they've feathered the cue ball, right?
100%.
So the player should call it. It shouldn't be down to the referee. Something as what can be as tiny as that, and it can be tiny, let's be honest, the player knows. Stuart knew from his chair that player knows. The player should call it himself or herself. It shouldn't be down to the referee to call it. The player should call it themselves. That's end of, really.
Wasn't a great look.
No.
Ishpreet, if you're listening, don't do it again.
There you go. That's that one then. Put to bed. Right, let's have a break, shall we? Are you ranty today or not? Or are you quite happy at the moment, Sean?
Do you know, I'm always one bad decision away from a rant. We'll find out.
See you after this.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. Yes, it is. And please do get in touch with us on social media. We've got a load of questions coming up shortly. Well, we're actually, time is marching on, so we'll have some questions coming up shortly. That is all people that have asked us via social media, so please do so if you can. Right then, Sean, rant. Are you feeling ranty or not?
Well, as I said pre-break, I only ever need tipping over the edge to have a rant, but I am feeling quite zen at the moment, not least because I am actually genuinely looking forward to working with you tonight.
Really?
Yeah, after all these years, our first professional night out together, I'm looking forward to it, and we've got pre-drinks to get to. So that and the fact you waffled on about Saudi Arabia for 20 minutes.
It is weird though, isn't it? I've done exhibitions with everyone. You've done dozens of exhibitions. We've never actually worked together on one. How strange.
Listen, anyone who's booked me before will vouch. You've worked with everyone else. Tonight will be the best night of your life.
You're going to beat Dennis and Steve Davis. But there you go. Right. Okay, let's get on to listener questions then, shall we? I shall start things off. Steve Hasak on Instagram has asked, Sean, would you rather hold the record for most centuries or most maximums?
That's a good one, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I'm going to go most maximums.
Most maxes. Most centuries, I mean, Ronnie's miles ahead there, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just sailed off into the distance. I don't think he'll be the holder for long. I think Trump will catch him.
Yeah, I think Judd, without any doubt, will catch him.
I think Trump will pass him.
Congratulations to Mark Selby, by the way. I think trips over the 800 centuries mark.
I mean, that's an amazing. Based on how much safety play Mark plays, that is ridiculous. He must have played nearly a million frames to have achieved that. That is ridiculous.
It just goes to show, doesn't it, what a myth that is.
This is all in jest.
Yeah. It goes to show what a complete myth that is. I mean, the guy's got 800 century breaks in his career. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, but they were all really boring.
Yeah, they were dull. Yeah, really, I mean, there was dull. No peril in them. The cue ball's too good, isn't it?
The Jester from Leicester is the worst nickname in the world. You know, has he ever told a joke?
It was the two Maxis at the Crucible last year, wasn't it? That Kyron's was really exciting because, like, literally the cue ball was on a lasso. It was going on. It was outside at one point. It was amazing, right?
I'll tell you how interesting it was. I'll tell you how good Mark Selby's was in the final. I was in the studio with Hazel that night, and we didn't notice. That's how good the cue ball was.
Out of position. Too easy.
He got to about 72, and I looked across the room because we're all in darkness. The studio's in the arena by then, and I looked at his and went, I think he's on a 147, because we just hadn't noticed.
Well,
I don't think even the director had put the one, no. You know, the eight reds, eight blacks in to the screen.
It was too good. It was just too good. Anyway, let's move on.
Maximums for me.
Yeah.
I think maximums. Yeah, I think maximums. Right. Clive Matthews from Instagram. He says, do you speak to players or check their nicknames? This is for you, Phil. Before you announce them. He says, Robbie Williams didn't look very happy when you said, let him entertain you at the shootout.
I had to do that, didn't
I? Do you
I?
Check?
It's a tap in that, isn't it?
Do you check?
I normally do. I didn't with Robbie on that one, and he pulled up a face. Fair enough. The crowd were always going to sing Angels anyway when he came out, because they do it every time at the shootout. As a rule, I check. Yeah, as a rule, I do. We've talked about the Ricky Walden walnut situation before on here. There was, at the shootout this year, Stephen Hallworth.
Yeah.
Now, he actually came to me. I was going around checking people's nicknames, and he said, oh, well...
Sizzling like a Lincoln sausage.
He said last year, Tahir called me the Lincolnshire sausage. And I was like, oh, okay. And he said, I quite like it. I quite like that. He said, so run with that. So I was like, oh, fair enough. So I called him it.
I think he does like sausage.
The crowd loved it. And I did get asked not to call him it. Not by Stephen, but by someone else. I did get asked not to call him it going forward. So we changed it to Sizzling Stephen Hallworth for the rest of the tournament. However, every time he appeared on the stage before I announced him out, the whole crowd was shouting, go on, sausage!
Go on, sausage!
Go on, sausage! So,
I think I was up on the balcony, to be honest.
Yeah, it sort of stuck. As a rule, yes, I do, Clive. Yes, I do ask.
Did I mention I had a 147 at the shootout?
Did you?
Yeah.
And we had a few gin and tonics after. I might have been on the balcony shouting at Stephen Hall.
You might have had a few before as well.
Yeah, no, well, listen, I'd like to say.
Anyway, James Beard on Twitter, just wondering what the latest is on the multiple cues experiment, as you were only using one in the last tournament.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the next Chinese event. So I've got through to China. Yeah, for Yushan for the World Open.
Now, you said it comes to the four in China. I'll be taking all different conditions.
I've got three. Wow. They'll all be going. We referred earlier to it. You can't take your cues on the train anymore. It'll be excess baggage for me on the internal flight because I'll be taking all three. There's no question that having cues with slightly more or slightly less cue ball deflection because of their tip size and general mass affects the way the cue ball moves. And there is also no question that in different territories around the world, that also affects how the cue ball behaves. And so try to counterbalance that. Changing equipment makes absolute sense. My experiment has found out, you know, I worked at that it doesn't really make much of a difference here in the UK and or Europe. And so since then, I've just put the other two. They're at home. They haven't seen the light of day. However, they will all be going to China.
There you go. So that answers the question. So keep an eye on Yushan.
GCHQ98 on Twitter. Now, this is very flattering. Thank you very much. Sean must be one of the few players on tour who wears a proper tied bow tie. I am. I believe Alan Taylor.
I think he does, yeah. I think he does.
Also does or did. Which helps to always make him look immaculate. Thank you very much. That's very, very kind. But how does he cue straight whilst wearing one? Also, are you aware of any other players who really struggled or gone to great lengths not to wear one?
Well, a lot of players wear the crossover.
That's a pathetic excuse for a tie.
Judge wears one of those, doesn't he? There's a few that do that.
Listen, I've found myself back on the board.
Yep.
If I ever find myself rewriting the dress code, you're all in trouble, lads. Because they're going to get banned if I ever have anything to do with it. It raises a serious question, though, because, I mean, it wasn't in the dress code. They changed the dress code for the Masters this year.
Yes, they did.
Afternoon sessions always used to be ties.
Yeah.
And that used to cause some problems. Most players having not tied a tie since school. So the ability to tie and make my own knot with my bow ties, which are obviously self-tie, gives me the opportunity to manipulate mine.
Yep.
It's not something I've ever had a problem with. Never had a problem with the bow, the knot, being in the way. But it is something other players have talked about.
Yep.
There are two obviously well-known players who claim a medical dispensation to not wear a tie, Stephen Maguire and Tom Ford.
Yep.
I think, and that's been very common for a long, long time, most of their career, I think. Of course, with a medical exemption, you can get away with anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, let's hope no one turns up with a medical exemption to not have to wear a shirt or something. I mean, that would be disgraceful.
Can I just say, sorry, this is going to sound very, very niche and a bit hoity-toity, but people in the media, in the public eye, learn how to tie a tie, not just bow ties. You see politicians on the news who clearly went to very good schools and everything else, cannot tie a tie to save their life. Chris Mason, BBC top political correspondent. Goodness me, he looks like he has tied it in the dark whilst wearing oven gloves every single time.
Whilst on a galloping horse.
Yeah, people laugh at me when I'm in the arena just before we go live on television. So I'll turn around to the referee or someone in the crowd and I will check my tie is straight. It's always a Windsor knot and I will check the tie is straight. Because I'm about to go on live television, yeah? This guy's on live telly every single morning. Every single morning, he's not. He's all over the shop. Learn how to tie a tie. It's not difficult.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the son of a tailor.
Claxon in myself. Okay, moving on. Andrew Jacklin on Facebook. He says, my best friend's dad was Steve Starkey, longtime referee. Passed away a few years ago, but does Sean have any memories of him? It would mean a lot to his son, Dave, if he has any memories to share. What a lovely question.
Yeah, lovely man. Really well thought of in the Northwest. And, of course, nationally, he was one of the top English governing body referees.
Yep.
Well respected by everybody. And I just remember, you know, from being a young player, obviously coming through the junior system with the EASB, which is now the EPSB, Steve was a very familiar face and somebody who, when I moved back to Manchester, as a youngish guy,
got back involved in that area. You know, used to do the local district presentation nights and stuff. You'd always bump into Steve, real character as well. And yeah, very, very sadly missed. You know, I used to love bumping into him in Urmston and Flixton around Manchester. He was always there, and he was, he's one of those men who you always had a good story to tell or a good joke, or he was always in good spirits.
Yeah.
And very, very sadly missed. He passed away a few years ago, and yeah, I miss him very dearly.
That's lovely. Lovely thing to say. Just on Manchester, by the way, I'll be at the Tour Championship. Have I mentioned this yet? Whether you're there or not, I will be at the Tour Championship. I'll be on the mic for the week in Manchester Central. Brand new venue. I'm very excited about this. You might be able to tell. Right in the centre of Manchester. Fantastic new venue for snooker. It's going to be amazing. That right in the heart of Manchester. I will be there first week in April. Anyway, Sean.
Liam McMullen, Facebook. Long question cut down. Thank God. Where do most players look when cueing the white cue ball or object ball?
Can I just say, I did cut this question down because it was like pages. It was a long question. So where do most players look when cueing the white cue ball or object ball?
Well, this is a debate that's raged for a long time. And the general debate is, at the moment of impact, as you strike the cue ball, where do you look?
Yeah, go on.
We were always taught from day dot to, as the tip strikes the cue ball, to make sure you're looking at the object ball.
Right, now, Muggle over here, okay. Now, I would think you look at the cue ball, because it's like in golf, you don't look at the hole.
The cue ball's the target.
Yeah, you don't look at the hole. You keep your head down, you look at the golf ball as you swing your club. When you're playing football, you're not looking at the goal when you're striking the football with your foot. You know, you're looking at the ball to make sure you strike it the right way. If you're playing rugby, you look at the ball when you're kicking goals. I would assume cue ball.
There are three varieties. There are certain players who, at the moment of strike, only look at object ball.
Okay.
There are players who, at the moment of strike, only look at cue ball. And there are players who mix based on what type of shot it is.
Really?
Some look at object ball, and on a different shot, they look at object ball. I'm a mixed player.
Wow.
Depending on the shot, the length of the shot, what I'm trying to do, some shots I'll look at the object ball. And some shots I'll look at the cue ball.
And there's no right or wrong, I guess.
There's no right or wrong. Steve Davis was object ball all his life. John Parra, object ball all his life. The two most successful players ever.
Yep.
Look at the cue ball. At the moment of strike, Stephen Hendry and Ronnie O'Sullivan both look at the cue ball as they strike the cue ball.
Wow. There you go.
So there is no answer.
In answer to your question, Liam,
do what you want.
Try them
all, and which one makes the balls go in the pockets, that's the one for you.
Right, we are just approaching the hour. So we've got one more listener question before we come on to our pointless question. And that is from our old friend, Sean. Go on, give us his name.
Jaffa Thundercat.
Jaffa Thundercat, as you once called him. Jaffa
was that like episode two or three?
It was, yeah.
Thundercats are on the loose.
Mum ran all. Yeah, anyway. Jaffa Thundercat on Instagram says, I like this question. If you were both to go on a Top Gear style road trip, where in the world would you go and what cars would you take?
That's a great question.
It's a wonderful question.
I mean, I've watched every episode of Top Gear.
Love Top Gear.
Love Top Gear. Some of the roads they found in those shows, which were like, you know, you wouldn't think some back road in Romania would be any good, but it turned out to be incredible. Of course, they famously got chased out of the deep south and Argentina and all that. I've always had a thing about doing some big trek across the States.
Yeah, Route 66.
Route 66.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe it's just been bred into me or something.
I'm with you with that.
That would be me, and it would be in, I don't know, depends on luggage. I mean, I've been very, very lucky over my life. I've owned an Aston Martin, so it'd be very hard to see past that. You could borrow Luca's Ferrari.
You could.
Sure, he's not using it at tournaments much. So it wouldn't have many miles on it. Something like that, wouldn't it? It'd have to be.
Yeah, Route 66. Route 66 would be amazing.
Route 66. Here it is.
Yeah.
I've just got it. Can't believe I didn't. Route 66.
Yep.
In an Aston Martin DB5 from 1964.
Now you're talking.
Oh.
That's nice.
Suit you. What would you drive?
I'd go Porsche 911 Sport Classic, which is beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful motor.
Are we doing the same trip?
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, we'd have to abuse each other and not set off till lunchtime each day. But yeah, it'd be a It'd be a great trip.
That sounds like every episode of Top Gear ever.
It does, pretty much. Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. They're the cars we do. Right, let's...
Should we bring back Top Gear?
Yeah, I don't think...
Should we do it ourselves?
I don't think that'd work somehow. I think, yeah.
Who would be our third member?
Oh, that's a good question. It's got to be Brissell,
surely. Because you're Clarkson. You're the grumpy one.
Wow. Says the man with the shirt tucked into his jeans.
I'm going to say I'd probably be James May. I'd be James May.
We need our Richard Hammond.
Who would be our Richard Hammond?
Who would be our Richard Hammond?
If you want to be our Richard Hammond, get in touch.
Yeah. At 147pod across all forms of social media. Right, get questions in. We've asked a few there. Rattle them off pretty quickly. At 147pod across all forms of social media. Only one question left, and it is our pointless question. We ask one every single week, and it is based on current affairs, okay? So we've already talked about the Riyadh season golden ball. So you can only choose one to introduce to snooker, Sean. The Riyadh season golden ball, which gets an extra 20 points potentially at the end of a 147, or the 10-point purple ball from Snooker Plus. In play all the time.
Purple ball.
Purple ball?
Yep.
I go purple ball.
Hang on. What? We've agreed on something.
We're agreeing on a pointless question.
Turn the machine off. Turn it off.
What's going on there? There we go. Right. We are looking forward to our exhibition this evening. We keep saying it. Get in touch at 147pod across all forms of social media. Sean, good luck in Germany.
Thank you very much.
Play well. Qualify for the Players and Tour Championship while you're there. No pressure. You could. And I shall see you in Manchester.
Roger that.
Wonderful. See you all very soon. Thanks a lot for listening. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.